conduct an audit for another state agency, and one of the recommendations coming from that was the recommendation that the real estate commission, it was on a real estate transaction for this other agency, and one of the recommendations coming from that was that the commission should define what actually constitutes a conflict of interest. And so that's the reason for this thorough definition that's incorporated into Section 391. Section 394 is a new section that ties in with the agency disclosure, which is in has been in Section 396 since 1991. One of the things that the industry has asked for and that the commission has attempted and not been able to achieve is to have a standardized form for the initial disclosure of agency, of who a person is working for. And this one would simply make that a requirement. It would be, the form itself would be a regulation, as the property disclosure form is a regulation of AS 3470 that is not part of the real estate commission bit, but part of the property law section. But that's what is being, would be accomplished by enactment of Section 394. 396 is essentially the same as it now is with the housekeeping of the terminology to match the endorsements. And in Section C, the word joint agency was used originally, and that's caused a lot of confusion. What is actually, that's been used interchangeably with dual agency, and so it's moving it back to dual here just to avoid the confusion that's out there, because the same thing was meant by them. Section 401 expands and clarifies the types of behavior that are not condoned, and also reiterates that compensation for licensed activity must be paid by the broker to the appropriate licensee, and on the part of the licensee can be accepted only from the broker. Section 450 deals with the surety fund, adds language that corresponds to the language in Section 091 regarding fees received from educational offerings. And 455 has no real substantive change. 460 includes a filing deadline for a surety claim, which is something that was done at one time with regulations, and that was overturned by a Supreme Court decision. And this would put it into the statute that if a claim was going to be filed, it had to be done within 2 years after the infraction occurred. Right now, we don't have any time limit on it. Sections 465 through 470 are housekeeping changes. Section 472, the change here is one that would allow the costs of surety fund hearings to be charged to the fund as they occur. As the section now reads, when a claim is paid, or is awarded, the costs can be charged to the fund. But as I indicated at the very beginning of the testimony, very rarely are the checks from the surety fund cut in the same fiscal year as the claim is filed. And a lot of the hearing activity is not necessarily in the same year that the check is cut. And yet the appropriation and the money funding source is on a fiscal year basis, and it is not realistic to try to calculate what the hearing costs are when it's finally determined whether a claim is going to be awarded or not, and have it be paid based on the activity in the fiscal year that the check is cut, because it doesn't track with the amount of time and expense that's been incurred. The sections 474 through 495 are basically just editorial changes.
Hold on there, Representative Ryan, do you have a question?
Yes. The last class I took, the largest topic that was done was the dissatisfaction of the people in the industry with the uses that the surety fund was for which it was being used. They felt that they were being taxed over and above the purposes for which the fund was set. They didn't like the AG's opinion that extra monies would just go into the general fund. They didn't like the idea that people were using, hiring people and paying wages out of this fund, that there was actually no educational reimbursement. We got a little newsletter, and then everybody else and his brother seemed to get paid out of that educational thing, and there was nothing coming back to them. And this went on for like 45 minutes out of a course of instruction, and there were some very, very disgruntled, very angry people who want something done about that. I have talked to the chairman about perhaps an amendment here, but that may not be appropriate. I may have to put a bill up. I have received a printout of all the things that are for which the fund is used, and the educational fund and the surety fund, and I'm not really too sure that it's my understanding that fund was set up to pay claims, and now we want to take hearing costs and everything else. This thing will never end, and the fees will keep going up. That is not what the people in the industry want to see at all.
Well, your concerns are noted, Representative Ryan, and if you'd like to respond briefly, I know we have a lot of ground to cover, but I don't want to get too far involved in this today. But go ahead.
I would just say that there, as far as the surety fee escalating, there is a cap in the statute, and there's no proposal to change that cap of the amount that the licensees are being assessed. The landlord-tenant booklet and education that we have done has been one of the most popular things that anybody in the division has done there in terms of educating the public, which was also a part of the authorization, if you will, in AS 088091.
If I could very briefly comment also through the chair, Representative, in terms of the hearing costs, I think that from my perspective, regardless of how you feel about educational activities and staff costs coming out of the surety fund, it seems like the cost of actually conducting the hearings that determine whether or not someone wins their claim or loses are very legitimate things to be paying out of the surety fund, because without the hearings, the whole surety fund structure can't operate. The hearings are where we decide if someone's owed a claim, and so it seemed like that's almost the very most appropriate type of cost to be billing to the fund. That's just something that I'd like to lay out as my perspective.
Well, we could get into this a long time. We have quite a bit to cover here, and we will. We're not leaving this bill, Representative Ryan, yet, and hopefully we can have a chance to talk about this further. If you would continue.
Okay. Actually, I'm almost finished. I'm going to skip over section 900 and 990 right now, because that's one of the things I would like to ask one of the people standing by on the teleconference to address. I would like to talk about the transitional sections and the effective date of the bill. In this committee substitute, the effective date is different from what it was in the original House bill, because if it were excuse me, if it were to be put in place, it would mean the regulation project to set the educational curriculum and so on. It would mean revamping the exam and then getting the word out, the classes delivered to the appropriate licensees. And so it is proposed that the effective date be January 1 of 1999, which would mean then that anyone currently licensed would renew in January of 1998, and anyone new coming into the business after January 1 of 1999 would have to meet the new initial criteria, and the first time that the currently licensed people would have to meet the new education criteria would be for the renewal in January of 2000. So it gives a long lead time to get ready for that bill. Now, there was on the task force, Kristen Tanner, who was a member of the commission at the time that the task force was meeting and was a very active member of the task force, I think is much better versed than I am to talk about the rationale that went into the exceptions and definitions that you find here in the bill. And so, Kristen, if you're standing by, I'd like to yield to you with the permission of the chair.
Right. One question before
We go on to Ms. Tanner, Representative Ryan.
Ms. Oakley, has Cal Winey had a chance to look at this? And if he has he offered any comment?
I have discussed it briefly with him. I don't know whether he has looked at the actual text of the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Representative Ryan, we have circulated the bill to every major real estate practitioner. However, we did not specifically go to the schools and teachers. We went to practitioners that have to live with the bill on a day-to-day basis. And we've got significant feedback, and we will continue to do that, so just for your information. At this time, we'd like to go to Ms. Christine Tanner. It's on the teleconference in Anchorage, please. Or in Matsu, I guess, right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick note before we go into the exceptions. I wanted to point out that as real estate practitioners, we pay two fees when we renew our licenses. We pay one to the surety fund and one to renew our license. And whether or not the money is actually paid out of the surety fund for the hearing or paid out of our budget, the net result is the same. Because if we pay it out of our budget, that means that our cost of renewing our license will go up. So it has to come from one of those two places, and regardless of which it comes from, we will have to pay the cost. And I'm sure the legislature isn't going to pull it out of someone else's fund to pay it for us. So I think that regardless of where it comes from, it has to come from one of those two places, and we as licensees are going to pay for it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Tanner. If you'd like to continue with your testimony, please.
Sure. Under the exceptions, when we went through and developed our recommendations to the full commission, we noticed that there were many things over a period of years that were exceptions and currently were in violation of the law. And I'll give you one example. For instance, for Representative Ryan's benefit, during the downturn of the real estate industry in the late 80s, we found that many people were in the process of trying to keep their homes and not lose them and were ending up renting them out as they moved out of state. And unfortunately, they could not afford a property manager and would have their neighbor or their parents or their children take care of that property for them. And clearly, with the law that we have in place today, that is a violation of our law. And so one of the exceptions in this new proposed plan is for an exception of a total of four units. And what the intent is that could be four homes or a fourplex. And accepting those, because we found that the majority of the time that this was taking place was when someone with just one home or a duplex or a fourplex. When you go over fourplexes, you tend to get into commercial property, and then we're not talking about a small owner of real estate. We're usually talking about someone who is owning real estate as an investment and can afford a property manager. So under these exceptions, we also had a bookkeeper performing bookkeeping functions, tradesmen or vendors performing maintenance. We wanted to make sure that clearly the exceptions were in there so there wasn't any misunderstanding of who needed a license and who didn't. So we clearly put these exceptions in there so that we could eliminate some confusion and also take care of some problems that we saw happen during through the late 80s and early 90s. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Well, Christine, would you consider, you think with your background of having served on the Real Estate Commission, if there was a situation that Representative Kadri had mentioned that, if they came in and asked for an exemption under the statute, that wouldn't be granted, or would that be just a big pain in the rear, or what do you think about that?
My opinion is with 10 units, as Mr. Representative Ryan described, the opinion of the commission for the protection of the public, because clearly that's part of our duty is to protect the public from harm, is that a property of that size needs to be managed by a licensed practitioner who has the education and the understanding of the law to apply it appropriately for that many people.
Even if his poor mother had to move to Paducah and he had to look after it?
Our opinion would be that needs to be handled by a licensed practitioner, that 10 units is clearly more than just a residential nature of 4 units or less or a fourplex.
Other questions of Ms. Tanner? Representative Ryan.
Yes, Ms. Tanner, you mentioned earlier a reference to my concern about the surety fund. This bill is a major expansion of power for the commission and taking into a lot of things that you previously haven't done. I'm not sure that if you were to take a vote of all the people that were licensed versus the commission and the brokers, that you would find this thing to be all that popular. Yet you're coming to us and asking for this authority. We have some concerns as to the more authority you have, and the more you exercise, the higher the cost. And there may be a lot of people out there in the business who don't necessarily want to pay for those costs. There's always seems to be different levels of perspective in every endeavor in which people engage. And I want to be satisfied that all these various costs and so forth that are going to be looked upon as constant contribution is going to be something that the rest of the people in the industry don't object to. That's why I had my concerns.
Thank you, Representative Bryan, and I sure understand that. From my perspective, first of all, at this point, I want you to know I'm one of you. I'm not on the commission at this time, and I have been a licensed practitioner for 13 years. However, the majority of this information that is in this work draft came out of, and let me just say that the 2.5 years I was on the commission, we saw a number of different violations by practitioners which clearly harmed the public. And yes, the surety fund did pay for that, but what we tried to do is look at what were the causes. Forget that the money is being paid, but let's look at what are the root causes of these claims that are being filed. And what we tried to do with the task force is to develop some different education and some different endorsements so that clearly the people that were operating in property management or in community association management or in sales got the education that they needed for each one of those and were not taking education that was strictly geared towards sales. But I think that what you'll find in here, I certainly am not in favor in a general nature of more regulation or a larger statute, but unfortunately I have seen a lot in the 2.5 years I was on the commission, and this bill is a step in the direction to try to not only protect the public but also ensure that the people who are licensed are getting the education and the license, pre-licensing that they need to perform their functions adequately.
That's only reasonable. I understand your concern.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kadri.
Yeah, it's as a comment more than anything, it seems that, I understand the purpose of this to keep the crooks at bay, so to speak, but like I said, sometimes we get a little bit further than maybe is absolutely necessary, and I'm not saying that there wasn't a lot of time spent in considering this, but anyway, that was a little bit of my thought that I'll have to reevaluate the bill, and maybe I'm sure we're going to deal with it at a later date more in depth anyway. So.
Right, we will be having significant public hearing on the bill from, I would assume, mostly people in the business on Monday, and get a good feeling, hopefully, at that time, what the consensus is in the industry, which I believe is pretty strong. I think what Representative Ryan brings up a few points and some concerns that people variously have shared, and that is truly under the title here, but it's not the main thrust of what we're trying to do, but it is spoken to in the bill. And
could I just add to? I think that while it is a long bill and it looks pretty overwhelming, it's the overall end result would be not so much an adding of control and regulation as a segregating to the control to tie and be relevant to the particular specialties within the field of real estate.
Well, to put it in a nutshell, Ms. Oakley, this bill does not expand the scope of the real estate licensure except as to community associations.
Correct.
It merely defines what previously was under the statute regarding property management in such a way as it hopefully clarifies that responsibility to the public. So we're not making that many major... We're not doing a major expansion other than in the community associations. But I think what Representative Ryan was referring to was some of the provisions in the language that related to education and surety fund. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I may. I'm in my 61st year, and I still learn things every day. But having a license at this time, I would not have any objection whatsoever to taking individual courses on the different specialties. But I wouldn't be really happy going back and taking more tests. If those people who come after me need that sort of proof that they know what they're talking about, I'm all for that. But I would like to receive a grandfather on that.
Well, that's a great lead-in, because we do have the provisions for grandfathering in...
Right, it's Terry McGilvery, yeah. We do have one more witness here that we want to get in, Terry McGilvery. And maybe you can speak to some of the concerns that Representative Ryan just mentioned. Now, Terry, are you in Anchorage, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
Please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
I am Terry McGilvery, staff member of the Alaska Real Estate Commission, and I work directly with the Commission's task force through the entire process of drafting this proposed legislation. I was asked today to discuss the anticipated transition process to a system of specialty endorsements. Under the current law, real estate licensees are permitted to practice real estate sales, property management, or both. Therefore, the task force came up with a transitional plan under which existing licensees, during the first year after the proposed effective date of this measure, would be able to have obtain an endorsement for sales or property management or both simply by applying for it. Community association managers, on the other hand, are not currently licensed or regulated by the state. The transitional measure for existing community association managers would permit them to obtain a real estate license with an endorsement for community association management by providing evidence that they are currently practicing community association managers. Those endorsed during the transitional period would be required, just as new licensees would be, to accomplish the continuing education for each specialty endorsement they hold before the first license renewal after the effective date. If the required education was not accomplished, no licensee would be eligible to renew. The proposed transitional schedule, briefly, is that new licensees requesting licensure after January 1st, 1999 would be required to take pre-licensing courses for each endorsement and pass the examination weighted for each endorsement requested. New licensees issued only with
New licenses would be issued only with endorsements beginning January 1st, 99. Any licensee reactivating an inactive license or reinstating an existing license after January 31st of 1999 would do so under the transitional provisions I just described, applying for endorsements according to those requirements. All licensees renewing at the biennial renewal deadline date, January 31st of the year 2000, would renew only upon completing required continuing education hours for each endorsement. And I would just like to reiterate that the purpose of this legislation is to protect Alaska consumers by ensuring the competency of the real estate professionals that they work with in each kind of transaction in real estate, and that this legislation is a product of the cooperation of consumer representatives, industry representatives who participated extensively in the drafting of the legislation, and it is supported by the Alaska Association of Realtors, the Alaska chapter of the Institute of Real Estate Management, and the Alaska chapter of the Community Associations Institute.
Does that conclude your testimony, Terry?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Are there questions of Ms. McGilvery? Ms. McGilvery, is your salary paid for out of the surety fund?
Yes, sir, it is.
And what do you do?
I work mainly in real estate education. I publish the Alaska Real Estate News, which is a newsletter, which this year is to be published 6 times during the year, and it keeps licensees up to date on legal information, which can hopefully keep them out of court and keep consumers from being inadvertently victimized. Also, we are able through that to get information from the department, the division, or the commission to all of our real estate licensees. This is the only method of direct communication that we actually have. I also worked on the landlord-tenant brochure, which is distributed statewide and is being updated at this time with new legal research to show exactly what landlords and tenants and property managers all need to know in order to practice within the law. And we did a broker manual, which tells the brokers how to set up a new office and how they operate trust accounts legally and exactly what is required of them when they begin in the business. There are a number of different things that the commission does to work on education. And as Kristen mentioned a little while ago, the subject comes up at the time when a problem is noticed. So any different area might be addressed at different times, and the request comes from the Real Estate Commission.
Terry, are there any other realtors in Anchorage at the LIO?
Yes. Chris Stevens is here.
Okay, very good. I know we're going to be running out of time here, but I wanted to go back to Christine Tanner about and ask Christine if are you still online?
Yes, I am.
Could you tell me, as a member of the task force, what was the nature of the task force conclusions and conversations regarding extending the endorsements to a commercial broker or a commercial real estate practitioner as an additional endorsement?
We did have that discussion, and after a lot of discussion, concluded that whether it be residential sales or commercial sales, that the point of contention in the industry over education and the type of licensing education we take to renew our license, there was no really a dispute over sales, but there was a big dispute with the property management licensees who did not feel that the education being provided was helpful to them in their business. So rather than make a fourth category, it is seen throughout the testimony that we had and the different people on the task force that represented all the industries that the sales category, being an umbrella for both residential and commercial, was fine.
But many commercial brokers and they involve themselves in leasing activities, which is now the exclusive realm of property management under the new endorsement regime. Is that not true?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, please?
Under the new endorsement regime in the bill that says property management, they are exclusively allowed to conduct the renting and leasing of space. So to be a commercial lease agent, you have to have a property management endorsement. Is that correct?
I think that would be correct. Is that your understanding, Terry?
Yes, it is. And I just like to add that the commission, the current commission, since Kristen was there, has also discussed this matter. And although this was not addressed by the task force specifically because of the fact that it was not assigned by the commission specifically to that task force, it does seem to be the opinion of many of the licensees and also of the existing real estate commission that it would be very logical to have a commercial endorsement.
Very good. We're running down on time right now, and I was wondering if Chris, you're going to be able to testify on Monday, or if you care to say anything right now, if you're there in Anchorage, Ms. Stevens?
I don't know what is appropriate for me to testify to today. I simply attended the hearing curiosity to see what was happening in this thing. There's a couple of areas of concern. If you would like me to address them now, I can do so. If you prefer that I wait for the public hearing, I can do that.
Why don't you, if you would, don't mind coming on Monday, but would you comment on the concept of a commercial endorsement, if you would favor that? Or what do you think the CCIM or the industry people opinion is on it?
Yeah, I think that commercial real estate is distinctively different from residential. It's so distinctively different that when I sold my house and bought a new one, I listed my home with a residential agent, and I used that residential agent to help me buy a new house, which cost me a substantial amount of money. But I did it in spite of the fact that I've been in the trade for 17 years, but I haven't had anything to do with a house in 16, and I recognized that I had no idea what I was doing in residential. And as I did those transactions on my own home and buying a new one, I understood by the time it was over that I know nothing about residential. And for me to try to do a residential transaction would be like taking somebody off the street and asking them to do it. And I think the same holds true for commercial. There is just no similarity whatever between the two, because in commercial you're not dealing with people buying and selling of homes. You're dealing with businesses doing business transactions on leasing and acquiring commercial real estate. And the knowledge that a practitioner has to have, the skills they have to bring to the table, are totally different. And as a practitioner, we do have instances when people who really don't have any experience in commercial and are spend most of their time in residential attempt to do a commercial transaction. And if I'm involved in it, you know, it's very, very obvious that they really don't know what they're doing. And I don't think this is good for the public. It's not good for the industry. And I think that a differentiation between the two is just logical. When I heard the testimony today regarding the need for education and education as a specialty, I can tell you the education that I have taken as for my continuing education talks about fair housing, issues such as that have nothing to do with commercial real estate. And as a result, the commercial practitioners who are taking additional education are essentially totally wasting their time. They're not getting any education where they need to get it. So if we're going to address this issue of differentiation for property managers, maybe this is a good time to look at commercial also and try to solve that problem at the same time.
Well, Chris, could you identify yourself for the record, Dan?
Yeah, my name is Chris Stevens. I'm a commercial real estate broker in Anchorage. I'm the president of Bond, Stevens, and Johnson and commercial real estate firm here.
Well, thank you very much. And if you could communicate with our office, and then if we would not be at all adverse of you testifying again on Monday if you so desire on some of these other issues.
Mr. Rupert, I'll certainly be there. The only one other issue that I would like to bring up, and I know that Grace Oakley mentioned it, and it has to do with this, the commission establishing the disclosure that you have to provide to a client or customer. The commission has a task force working on that, and from the commercial standpoint, it has certainly been controversial. It's been controversial from the residential standpoint also, I understand.
You're talking about the agency disclosure, that new section?
And I think that, you know, that's an area we have to be very careful on what we're doing, because the disclosure how you do that, I think, whether it's commercial or residential, I think is greatly different. But I also think that there are a lot of residential agents who had a lot of concern about the draft document that was produced also. So I don't know how that relates to that section of this proposed bill, but I was concerned to see that. I'm not sure I understand the ramification of it. My concern could be misplaced, but I did want to raise that also.
Well, for your information, I try to be as close to the initial task force draft as I possibly could, but that's one area I share your great concerns with, and we will be taking a hard look at that survivability in this bill. And I would just also say that I, too, share 25 years of experience as a commercial broker, and I too, have never been able to buy or sell a house myself. So, and Ms. Oakley had a comment.
I just wanted to point out that in the course of approving courses for continuing education, that over the years, the BOMA courses, Billing Owners and Managers Association, and the Commercial Institute CI courses for the CI Council, the International Right-of-Way, all of those various national organizations have consistently had courses approved that are the ones that I think commercial brokers thrive on. So there was pertinent education available, if maybe not at the time that you allocated in your schedules to take it, and that may be where some of the conflict of courses being useless has come about. But there have been a number of courses that have been very excellent courses that have been approved.
Well, just for Mr. Stevens' purposes, just let him know that the committee's taken on itself to inject a provision for National Association of Realtors approved and designated courses leading to designations, making them acceptable for elective hours in the statute. Just for your information, thank you very much. Is there further questions as we wind down here? One other statement, we have talked about a few corrective technical amendments to the bill, and you provide those to the committee. Now that we've lost our quorum, it makes little or no sense to pursue anything like that right now. So,
we're going to provide those, or are you expecting me to?
I think we have them. Well, right.
We've discussed those,
and I'm sure there'll be some that come out of our meeting today, and also the full public hearing we will have on Monday.
I will be at the Anchorage LIO on Monday, so that I will hear the testimony and be available for questions if you wish.
Well, I want to thank the committee. Thanks very much for coming down to Juneau and visiting this lovely city. When the sun's out, you lucky thing. And I know you have an airplane to go. If there's anything else you'd like to say.
I'm finished. Thank you for the opportunity to come and
All your hard work, and thank everybody else up the line. With that, the Labor Commerce Committee is adjourned at 5:33.